Are you new to investing? Wondering whether or not you can self-manage your properties? Let us tell you about our partner, Rent Ready. Rent Ready is an awesome property management software that can help you grow and handle every aspect of your real estate investing business. Rent collection, tenant screening, maintenance, lease signing, listing. Honestly, Rent Ready has everything.
One of the best features is their new tenant software, Latchel, where you're able to remove yourself as the landlord from being the middleman between tenants and maintenance calls. And it's also essentially a fraction of the cost of what you would pay for property management.
Let me also mention that Rent Ready is unlimited. All their plans are flat price. This means you can keep adding properties to your portfolio without having to pay more. You can close on all the properties you want, and Rent Ready's price stays the same. Best part about it is for you guys is they've given us an amazing deal to pass on to all Weekly Juice listeners. You can get 50% off any Rent Ready plan at rentready.com when you use our code JuicePod. That's rentready.com, RENTREDI.com with code JuicePod. JUICEPOD, and you'll get 50% off any plan. If this is your first time here, welcome. During our shows, we interview successful entrepreneurs and investors to spread knowledge, advice, and actionable tactics to help others in the pursuit of financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, and key lessons learned along the way in the hopes that these stories help you along your journey. Tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. If you've been here before and like what you've been hearing, please subscribe, share with friends, rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes an extremely long way for us. It's simple. Just click on your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on the reviews, and let us know what you think. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show, and in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high-quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod for daily content and personal finance tips to assist in your journey towards financial freedom. Welcome back to the Weekly Juice, where we talk real estate, entrepreneurship, and all things personal finance. Today, we had on special guests, Jen and Joe Delafave. They are a husband and wife real estate investing team that specialize in closing deals using creative financing. They have over 20 years of experience in the industry and are now real estate mentors and coaches to aspiring investors. Throughout the episode, they talked a lot about, as I mentioned, creative financing, subject to deals, rent to own deals. And they also talked about a really cool deal in a town called North Pole, Alaska. Didn't know it existed. Santa and his elves do live there, they told us. So you heard it here first.
Yeah, I literally was like, I didn't know that. I didn't know the North Pole. I didn't even know that it existed, but it's really cool. They talk about their whole thing is creative strategies, and they do a lot of seller financing, as you mentioned, and what was their wraps. And they also have a rent to own strategy, and they teach this now to a number of students across the country. They said they're going to be rolling out new courses starting in September. So very, very cool duo, couple duo, and they both divvy up tasks in their real estate business. They've been through ups and downs, and they really know what they're talking about, wealth of knowledge.
Let's bring them in. Jen and Joe, officially welcome to the Weekly Juice. We are thrilled to have you on. You've become highly regarded. We've been following your journey on social for quite some time now. You're quite the duo. So if you could just give a little background on yourselves, who you are, where you're from, for people that don't know you as well as we think we do, and kind of give us your story and how you got into real estate.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having us on. We're very excited to be here and certainly share as much as that we can. I actually was a teacher. So I was teaching English for 8 years, and then I met this handsome fellow back in 2008. So, we've been together for 13 and a half years, and, it was my dream to stay home and his to raise our children. So after 8 years, I walked away from a great profession, but I knew that staying home was really what we wanted. We ended up having two children, a boy and a girl, and they're currently 6 and 8. So a lot of our time is spent around them. We'll certainly be talking about them a little bit too. And, they keep us very busy. We're actually going to homeschool this year. So that's kind of a big, exciting, we did the remote learning, but I'm actually taking on homeschooling. So I'm pumped that this lifestyle is awarding that. So we'll get into that a little bit more. Being a former teacher, I just know that this is the right path for us right now. And I'm not sure how long we'll do it for, but we're really excited for for that adventure. But yeah, in 2008 is when I met him, and that's when I started learning more about real estate. But he has a little bit different story.
Yeah, I actually kind of got lucky. It was 21 years ago, my buddy bought one of these things off a TV ad late night with his mom. And it was like $300, which back then, you know, it was a lot of money.
VHS tapes.
You know. Yep.
It was VHS tapes. The thing was made in like 1999. So some of your audience might not have been born yet, but I read the book and then I watched the VCR tapes. And then literally a month later, I had a wholesale deal under contract. I just did what it told me to. I thought a little bit outside the box, found a deal. I ended up wholesaling it. I made $15,000. And my birthday was, you know, I just turned 23 and I cleared 12-7, and being a 23-year-old that just got almost a $13,000 check, boy, you thought I hit the lotto. So talk about fall in love, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, you just pulled me right into the boat and took me home and, you know, let's go. So after that, I started looking at a lot of other deals. I was seeing what's going on in the market. I bought my own property, which the house I live in. And I met Jen in 2008. And that's when I was really watching the market starting to change. And in 2008, we had access to money. I had a fantastic job making, you know, very good money. And with that, we started buying up houses in 2008, 9, 10 for deals that are just incredible. And we were landlords in the beginning. So we did all that while me working full time, her stay at home mom. So we kind of did the, you know, onesie twosies a year. We did that for a bunch of years and that was really working out well. We were trying to set ourselves up for a future of, you know, early retirement, not really probably retirement, just retiring really well.
Yeah. The goal was always to work together. So it was that one day he'll leave, one day we'll do this, one day. And one day fatefully came to us, luckily.
Yeah.
A lot sooner than we thought.
We couldn't imagine. COVID hits, you know, my career is taking off and I just keep coming up the corporate ladder and it's insane, you know, what I'm doing. And then once COVID hit March 2020, everything in New York closed. Everything we were going to be, I mean, especially New York got locked down a lot. So at that point we had a property available. So we were trying to do a rent to own in one of our, you know, houses that we have that we just got rehab that caught a fire the year before. I mean, we just had so much stuff going on and when we're looking at each other, we were actually talking about this today. Like it took me a few months before I realized like, hey, I'm not going back to work and this is what we're going to do full time.
Wow.
We just spent a hefty check in April. Was it April?
No, it was February. It was before March because the plan was my youngest was going to go to kindergarten and I would start doing real estate to bring my husband home, right, from his full-time job. So we really were working on the marketing. How are we going to buy more properties? Because you need that buying machine if you're going to take this full-time. You know, that's really the heart of the business. And it was just kind of the stars aligned. We had some really great investments already happening. And it's kind of funny, like he said, you know, you think like this, you know, I don't know, balloons were going to come out or like, yay, he's leaving his full-time job. But in reality, it was kind of the slow transition of, wow, this is our life now. And it still is taking to this day. Like I find myself rushing and like, we don't have to be anywhere right now. Right. So I'm really focusing on that time that we have and, you know, really enjoying that because nobody, you know, we're not raised that way. We're just constantly go, go, go from a very young age. So to kind of sit back and start breathing and enjoying things has been probably one of the biggest luxuries, I would say.
It's a very cool story. So thanks for sharing. And I think that it's cool that you ran into this situation. Actually, COVID was terrible for a lot of people, right? And I don't know if your families were affected by it, but it ended up creating a situation for you where you were able to free yourself from this job. So I want to talk about what your portfolio looks like now and what type of, doesn't have to be the exact number, but what type of income that you have coming in that has allowed you to step away and how many, you know, kind of how many properties it's taken you to get to that point.
So it was really odd what was happening was because, you know, the initial way we had our business set up when we were landlords, we had a huge transition. We had a pivot in 16 to 2017. We were no longer landlords. We had a lot of single family homes, but very short cash flow, because our goal is to have these properties paid off literally in 10 years, because we were going to plan on, you know, obviously like that. So we didn't really care about cash flow. I really, because my job was paying so well, I wanted to get the properties paid off. So obviously now transitioning our business, we went to a rent to own model, which ended up working out entirely better, which we'd have a whole other episode on that. But like, if you learn what we do with rent to own, you'll never want to be a renter, like a landlord again, because this is the best thing going on, we believe. But yeah, either way, we really started doing well with that. And then in 2021, we really have so many different options of how we buy properties. And that's what's really key. So we get into creative financing. Which was happening was, obviously I was looking for the old fashioned wholesale deals. We were looking for those big discounts on the fix and flips. And those are only going to be out there, and they're out there in abundance. I get it. But what about other people that doesn't work for, right? Like, how do I still make a deal with them? And that's where we really started diving into. I started getting into heavy in 2016, creative finance, and really how to do it. And with my background being in finance, these two things work like, I mean, peas and carrots for me. I really just kind of said the aha moments. And from there, we were actually able to structure much better deals than we could going through conventional financing or going through a bank. So once we realized we don't need a bank anymore, and actually we don't ever want to use a bank, you don't need to, and you can buy all the real estate you want and control real estate by just paper. And it's amazing. And once you start grasping this knowledge of how to do this, you don't have to get a ton more leads. You'll actually become just a lot more efficient with the same amount of leads you're getting, because you're going to have so many options that will work. Like, how many times have you had a seller, or somebody has, and they want to sell their property, but they owe way too much?
Yeah, I'm sure it happens all the time. And it's interesting. I kind of want to, you did say that we could have a full episode on it, but I'd like to maybe surface level dive in at least to like, how do you explain rent to own to somebody who's never heard it before? And then maybe peel off a couple layers and just talk about how that works in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. So we really saw the benefit of a rent to own model, because we love the idea of a fix and flip, but I didn't want to have to pay the capital gains tax. I don't want to have to pay a realtor 6% commission, because now I'm looking at obviously a big expense. So I also loved the residual income, but I didn't want to be a landlord, because getting the phone calls and my toilet plug, my drains, nightmare right on Elm Street. And I'm not going to be an adult babysitter. And that's really what it is. And what happens is, I think a lot of times somebody buys their first rental or two or three, and then they think, they don't realize this is actually a job. And it's not what you see on TV where, oh, this is just easy residual income or, you know, passive income. There's nothing passive about this. This is residual income because there's some work you guys will put into it, but it comes in monthly. So that's good. Hopefully.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
So once we kind of discovered that we kind of wanted all of these things to happen, we kind of figure out the best of the best. So what we did was we started doing a lease purchase. Sometimes we break it down, calling it to rent to own. They're basically the same thing. And what we're doing is we're working with a completely different client than any renter you've had to deal with. We work with clients who actually want to own the property. And so what we'll do is we find a, you know, obviously a nice deal. We'll put it on the marketplace. What we'll do is we'll install a tenant buyer who will give us a non-refundable option deposit. Does get applied towards the purchase when they're ready to buy. If they move out or break it, they know they don't get it back. It's all part of the paperwork. We actually have them do the paperwork with attorneys, so they know what they're signing, so there's no confusion. You know, the attorney goes through it line by line and explains to them what they're signing, so they're very clear. However, they've got skin in the game, and that's a different type of a person, because maybe they don't have good credit. Maybe they do. Maybe they got other things that are holding them back from getting a mortgage, but whatever it is, we'll give them that time. We have an excellent screening process. We've got companies that will work with them to kind of fix whatever's broken. And we work with some of the best mortgage people in the country for what we need to have done. And I'm not talking high rates or something like that. They're just really good at figuring out they're very creative at getting our people done. Mm-hmm. But what happens is really, they don't have to be too creative, because if you've got a good, you know, amount of money down for the deal.
I guess I should say they understand creative deals. Yeah. It's really the bottom line there.
And their credit now has been repaired after a year, two, three, 4 years, whatever it takes. And then they're ready to buy it. It works out well. So the way the business works, just to peel off another layer for you, you know, with that big option deposit up front, it could be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 or more. You don't get that when you're a landlord. You're getting first month's rent is the security. This your security in the deal. Security as far as what? Is that your insurance policy to them that if they wreck it, they don't get that back, right? I kind of like getting $20,000 or $30,000 more because now they feel like they're have some stake in it. So they're going to treat it differently. They're going to, you know, do the lawn, they manicure, they make the place look amazing. So we get cash flow monthly, but they're responsible for the maintenance repairs, the utilities, the upkeep, not us.
Got it. So I'm curious about something when it's a rent to own. So you actually don't transfer the deed of the property over until the actual, like a period of time, this 3 to 4 year process, maybe when they buy it, right? Like, is there a transaction point where they actually take it over? And the reason I ask this question is because is there a chance that if there is a market correction in that 3 to 4 year time frame, that is there a downside to doing rent to own? Like maybe I don't know a lot about it, to be honest with you. So I'm curious what your thoughts are there.
You've actually got great questions. So yeah, there's obviously that there could be a downturn. But at that point you give them more time. However, what also happens too is collecting a large enough deposit. Sometimes folks will save up money too. Sometimes they'll see if there's any grants that they could qualify where they're already renting their house, right? So the more they put down, the better their odds are getting approved regardless if there's a correction. What happens is where that issue could come in, because you generally don't see drastic where it just drops overnight till now it's zero, right? It happens gradually when it comes down. And if that does happen, you know, a large amount of money, the sum going towards the actual purchase of the home will really make that a lot easier. Those skinny ones could really change that loan to value quickly if they don't have much money to go. So that's number one. But if they don't have enough money down, you obviously have the option to give them more time, save up more money. We always encourage them to see if there's any grants they could qualify for. You know, there's sometimes there's free government money out there for not necessarily first time buyers. They think that, but it's just a home buyers club. And if you qualify from not owning a house in the last 3 years and other things like that, you might get some really nice money. So we encourage them to do that while they're fixing credit or whatever it is going on in their life. And once again, we really want to make sure that they're in the right direction. So we kind of get snapshots if they get out of the program for credit repair or anything like that. And, but they want to, because there's incentive on their end. You know, a lot of times their mortgage payment goes down. We let them know that they at one point are going to have to qualify for a mortgage. So that's why I want you and I encourage you to get into this credit program with the company that screened you, because they're going to correct all the stuff and then they're going to get you mortgage ready. And once they get you mortgage ready, if you want to go through your own, that's fine. If you need a mortgage person, we'll direct you to them too. So having the systems in place and the right people in place really makes sure everything keeps coming down the assembly line and gets them to cash out.
Joe Rye has a question. I know he does. I can see him like chomping, but I really, really quickly, how does this prevent you were mentioning that like the maintenance calls, are you saying that because when the person is a rent to own, they have to handle all the maintenance on their own? Is that actually how this works?
Yes.
Interesting.
Right. Yep. The only call we might get is, do you have a recommendation?
Got it.
Now, I will
with
say,
that said,
yeah, we do have a heart. Like, I'll give you an example. We did have one where the folks had a hot water tank go right before Christmas.
Yep.
And it was like $1,000. They didn't, you know, they were really in a pinch. I'm like, you know what? We'll just cover it. I mean, they've been great people. Mm-hmm. The property's, you know, excellent. Cash flows really nicely. So it was the least we could do. And we just took care of it for them and didn't discount it from anything. We just said, you know, Merry Christmas. And they were so happy.
Yeah. And I think even more than the maintenance calls is that they're treating it like their own home, where they'll redo the roof if they move in and feel that they need a new roof on there. Or we had one property where there was a bathroom like ready to be put in, but it hadn't been put in by the previous owners. So, you know, I was getting text messages and photos where the new tenant buyer was just so excited. Like, look, it was my first, you know, little project I've done before. So like they put money into that into the property. And so you're not getting the, my toilet's broken calls ever. Like I said, other than maybe, you know, do you have a recommendation or, you know, in that one instance where we have helped out.
And that's what really was giving Les the ability to scale, because we were self-managing before. And if you're going to use a management company, that really dips into it. So how do you also do this while avoiding those management company fees? If your tenant who's going to treat the place like it's their own home.
Mm-hmm. And that's the home ownership. And I think we go above and beyond to make that very clear with our tenant buyer, our program with 5x5 rent to own is that, you know, you have to have that desire to own your own home. This is not just a rental. And we go over that time and time again, prior to on videos, on Facebook. And, you know, they're ready for that. They know that when I own this home and my name is on the deed, then it's all my responsibility. So we're just prepping them for that.
Yeah.
Like it a lot. Sorry. I'm going to kind of rattle mine off. I'll try to weave them into each other just so I can get them out. Cause before we move to creative financing. So I'm thinking about, you mentioned right off the bat, you're like, hey, listen, like if we find a good deal, this is something we'll use. I assume that you mean you're going to run the numbers the same way or similar way to a regular buy and hold rental property that cash flows monthly. And that, you know, essentially your income is way much more than your expenses or the outflow. Then, so with this, I'm saying you find someone that wants to be a homeowner. When they essentially sign this form, and how do you structure the deal? Is it like in 10 years, you have to buy this home? I know they give you this $30,000 check up front. Let's just say that's our arbitrary number. Is that like a security deposit that you put in a separate account, or can you start using that 30K to have your cash work for itself and put it in another, like, I don't know, say for example, you have a separate account and you invest in some stocks, but you know, you have another 30K that if you need to back end use it, that's creative financing, right? You're having your money work for itself. So I'm just thinking of all these things. And like, I'm wondering actually like what percentage of these people actually buy at the end of the day? Cause you could have them taking care of this house. And then it falls through and it's like, okay, that's a great deal still for you too. And you keep it forever.
Yeah, there's definitely a couple pieces there to that question. So the first one being that the term length, right? So it's how did you buy that property? So to touch upon creative finance briefly, you know, if you've got a 10-year term with your seller, then you have 10 years. So you're going to want to, before 10 years are up, make sure that that person gets qualified to buy that house out. So that depends. If you have the property forever, then, you know, take your time with it. You know, there's not a red light there per se.
Yeah. And it's really up to your business and your model. So sometimes if you want them to cash out because you know you're going to have a back end check coming, and these could be, I mean, six figures, some of them. Mm-hmm. So if you have a back end check coming and it's going to be an amount that you really want, maybe that's something where you have conversation with your tenant buyer, like, hey, we really want to make sure you're going through this. Or sometimes you figure out just money in the bank and then just get that cash flow because you don't want to kill the golden goose who lays an egg every month. And, you know, I kind of love that. So I give them the time that they need. We will write up what will happen is with our screening service to help answer one of your questions. Our screening service will say that by a quick snapshot, they give you like a 71-page report, and it's called screenthetenant.com. We probably send these guys a fortune of business, but they're great. So it's $50 per applicant. If there's two people on the application, they're going to charge them $100. What's going to happen is now they're going to mail you, it's like a 71 page report, proof of income, proof of, I mean, everything they do, background checks, mm-hmm. criminal checks, sex offenders, and they give you the snapshot. And then they're also going to give you, so you don't have to read all the pages, a one or two paragraphs saying these folks will be ready in about 18 to 24 months for a mortgage.
Got it. Okay.
If they don't go do something, you know, crazy mm-hmm. with their credit from now to then, and, you know, they enroll, the program is either highly recommended because of their credit score being low, or, you know, they're a 780, they just need more time on their job, or they're self-employed, so they need to prove more income. So there's other things like that. So sometimes it's not always based on credit, but we will look at that. And so with our program, you know, I talked to two folks tonight, so I'll give you the perfect example. They've got 10 grand down. They're just waiting on getting the money through whatever account they're cashing out of. So they're ready to go in a few weeks. Now we bought that house with creative financing, and with that house being creative financing, we gave them $4,000 down, we paid their closing costs. So out of pocket, I would guess is about $7,500 total out of pocket at our end. And why I like, but we own it without having to go to a bank. We own it without having to get our credit pulled or anything like this. We just, you know, take over their payments. We own it now, though. The deed does go to our name. So I'm getting into some creative stuff if y'all want to know. And then what happens is with that $7,500, the way we love rent to own is because we're going to get $10,000 down. So now, even if we had to pay insurance, maybe even a payment or whatever, you know, our total out on that deal might be $8,000 or $9,000, but when we get that $10,000 down payment, you know, we're profitable from day one now, or from, you know, that point. And we have got now no money tied into the deal. We've got no credit tied into the deal. Everything else here is just 100% pure profit. And when you're good cash flow, I think it's $400 a month and some change. And you're able to do that for really as many years as you need to. And then when they do buy you out, you're looking at getting another bigger check. And the longer they're in it, they're paying down your balance. So the longer they're in there, the bigger your back end check is. So, right. I mean, it turns out to be really fruitful if you do it right, but you really want to help people too. Like, you really want to make sure your folks could get bought out. So we make sure we put the right people,
right person in.
You know, I don't put somebody in some really super expensive house if their income can't support it. You got to really just, you know, have a good head on your shoulders of what you're doing.
And to answer that other question, so the non-refundable option deposit, that's your money. Yeah. So, and it took me a little while to really wrap my head around it. So we did a couple deals. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. Like, it totally makes sense now. It's called a line item on the statement when they go to what we call the second closing table. So the first is where they're signing their lease option paper and their lease with the attorney. And then that's like, you know, now they're in the home. So that second closing table is when they officially will transfer the deed into their name and it'll just show up. But I will keep a copy of the check, but that money is long gone.
Not to jump over you here, but is this almost like a wholesale fee, like upfront, like this lump sum of like, hey, because you found them a home that they're going to rent and eventually buy, you get to keep this 10,000 or 20,000, whatever it ends up being. Or is it just their deposit to hold
No, that's house. Your money to spend. You're going to get taxed on it. We get taxed on it. It's your money to spend. It's non-refundable. It's going to go towards the purchase. So what happens is when your tenant buyer is ready to purchase, it's not like you have to come back with that $30,000 check. I'm like, oh, I still got it. Or here it is in my bank. No, all they're going to do is you just show that as a line item that's money already collected. And then they're going to show the rest of the terms, how it breaks down. And then here's your final check.
Got it. So it goes towards it. That makes perfect sense. Okay.
Yeah. It's not like a headhunter fee. It goes towards them eventually buying a house.
But you get that money like it's a wholesale deal because you get that money. Once you get it, it's yours to spend. Yeah. So if you decide you want to go buy something with that, you can. If you want to invest that money, you can. That's yours to spend. So that's the really neat thing about it is the way it kind of works is we get money up front, like a wholesaler fee but we get to own the property. We get money every single month, like a landlord without the responsibilities. And then we get that back end check like a flipper does without paying a realtor because we sell it directly to our renter and there's no short-term capital gains because we've owned that property for at least that year. So then, you know, you kind of avoid those obstacles. And it really turns out to be everybody wins in those situations, as long as you install the right buyer and they're going to, you know, continue on the right path.
Why would someone do a deal like this if they want to be in the long-term game? Like, what's the benefit of doing this type of deal as opposed to like a long-term buy and hold? Like, it's, you know, a lot of people want to pay down their mortgage. They want the monthly cash flow. And then eventually, like once the house is paid off, they sell it down the line. That's how we, you know, preach it to our crew of the buy and hold long term. This almost seems like a short term deal. So I'm just curious of like the benefits and the pros and cons.
So I guess my thing is I've seen landlords who've done this for a long time. And what I think happens a lot of times is, you know, when that roof needs to get redone, when that kitchen gets beat, when you're just sick of the phone calls, unless you manage it all out, it just becomes to the point where, you know, having these properties long-term for that and dealing with renters and all the things that come along with renters, for us, that's just something that I didn't want to be a part of after doing it. And doing what we're doing, you know, I guess, and especially because now with creative financing, I'm not having to walk into a bank and say, hey, can I buy this house? I have to put down, you know, my 3.5% or 5% or 20% or whatever the number is. I could just write a check for it, knowing I'm going to get that money right back and be profitable. And now I can buy these deals multiple. I'm not stuck buying one or two deals a year. And to be quite honest with you, I know we're going to dive into numbers, but we're generally doing 4 to 5 to 6 deals per month right now. Wow. So if we were doing 2 deals a month, I would even lose my mind, but you know, at the pace that we're at, and we've just made some recent changes where that number is going to jump within the next month or two. And that's going to be 10 plus pretty consistently. And we've got the goal and the clear path of how to get to 20 a month, which will be, I think in the next 6 months, that'll be pretty consistent.
Wow. So you're scaling this really fast. And I think the key to building a real estate portfolio is, or, you know, any really sales operation is to how are these leads coming in, right? So how are you finding these deals, and what is the best way for your business to bring leads in? And if you could just explain how you're finding them to our audience, that'd be great.
Right. And you know, it's crazy. We actually have a list of like 25. A few of them are paid. Most of them are free. One of the best ones, be quite honest with you, is word of mouth. Like, we let everybody know, like, if you bring me a deal and I buy it, we pay you $1,000.
Yeah. I would say the first thing that comes to my mind, especially if you're a new listener or somebody who's just thinking about real estate, you know, it's telling everybody what you do and taking advantage of the free social media out there. I think sometimes we get wrapped up in, well, I don't have thousands of dollars for marketing, and I can't do a mailer or this or that. And, you know, by spending some time, because you do have to give something, right? Creating a Facebook page with your face and pictures of you, not just I buy houses, a stock photo, and really creating the storyline of who you're helping, what it is you're doing, and being transparent. You know, you don't have to tell everything, but you know, we take a lot of time in our page. Jen Buys 585, if you want to take a look at it, and you're going to see pictures of us and homes that we've fixed up, or videos, and even our kids from time to time, you know, just to show that we're real people. And that has come in handy so many times, because paid or free leads down the road, they're going to go back to that page that now has just, you could scroll and scroll and scroll because time has gone into it. And you see that it's not just some, you know, one more investor on the street there. We really pride ourselves to show what we're doing, and people really enjoy seeing that. So definitely have a Facebook page. If you don't have one, you need a business Facebook page and a personal Facebook page.
And I totally agree. Like, I started this business in 2000. Guys, the internet wasn't like it is back
then. Not at all.
Right. So with it being, it's never been easier to communicate with other people. Now it's never been easier in the history of man as it is right now. So if you aren't blowing up your social media, letting everybody it is know who you are and what it is that you do, like, you got to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a given. That's free. I'll blow it out there. I'm 43 years old. I'll be 44 pretty soon. I've got people I've went to high school with who are reaching out to me and say, hey, I've got a friend. We have got a deal right now under contract from somebody I haven't chatted with since high school. We were buddies back in the day, but mm-hmm. You know, life gets busy. And he's like, I got a buddy who just, you know, doesn't want to mess around. He wants to sell his house. I mean, we're buying a really nice deal on that. So,
and with that, you know, offer the referral fee. Don't be greedy. Like, we're constantly sharing, like, we'll pay, you know, a comma check, he likes to call them, you know, so people love to be a part of it. They love money. And, you know, just hearing that, you know, even, I don't even think he knew he was going to get one. We just happened to say, hey, can we have your address? And he was like, oh, wow. You know, he was excited just to send somebody his way. So people are watching whether or not you realize it. And a lot of folks want to help you out too, especially if you're doing the right thing.
That's great advice. We've already seen that in our brief time here on our social, but we've been floated deals just in, not even in just real estate. There's a lot of different investing platforms that people are like, you guys need to take a look at this. It's moving quickly. I think you can get in. So obviously you have to weed those out and do your due diligence, right? But a lot of times it's really cool, where I talked about it a couple episodes back, or maybe 10 episodes back, but one of my mentors, I guess I kind of just leaned on him, and we talked real estate all the time, but he didn't realize how serious we were until I was like, we were just randomly going back and forth. And he's like, oh, I was like, we have a podcast about it. And he's like, really? And then he listened to the podcast, like, holy crap, dude, like, you guys are actually doing this. And right. He floated us a deal, and we rented it I don't know if we gave everybody, our listeners, I guess, like an update on here, but we thought we were going to get about like $2,200-$2,300 in rent. We ended up getting $2,700 and on a 2-year lease. So we're thrilled about it. So our cash flow is almost $1,000 on this deal. And we, it was a deal floated from a mentor, like you said, putting it out in the universe and letting people know what you're doing. And, it was just amazing. So it was kind of cool. It goes in right in line with what you said. We just preach, and they'll come to you. But I think it's important to give back, right? Like even just like contractors, hook them up, give them an extra $100, buy them lunch, buy them dinner. Just, you know, when our contractor's getting married, we're going to send him a wedding card. Like it's just little touches that puts you the human side on it, and it'll have people coming back. But I know we kind of been beating around the bush here. I do want to get into specifically how you fund your deals. And I know you are two experts in creative funding. So can you explain what you mean by that? Like specifically creative financing, and then, you know, some of the many ways you do fund your deals without having to go to the bank?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is my favorite part. So when I talk about how many deals per month we're doing, I want to be very transparent on that. They're not all creative finance, right? So what happens is we have sellers who reach out to us. We can reach out to sellers too, because we have an angle that really nobody truly understands. So there's not much competition of any at all. So when we're talking to a seller, we're the first person that if the deal is within line, what I mean by in line, if it's a $200,000 house and they want 180 for it, 190, I can do that. If it's a $200,000 house and they want $275,000 for it, I'm out. I'm not interested. And there's, believe it or not, even today, there's people who'll do that and try. But if the deal's in line, really what I want to do is see how we can buy it. So with creative finance, you've got things like seller finance, where if they don't owe any money on the house, you can just do a deal directly and have the actual owner turn in from the owner, no longer the owner, but turn into a bank, right? Where they're going to be making monthly payments to them. Now, what's going to happen is when you're dealing with folks who really just have not real estate investors who own 250 properties, but when you're dealing with somebody who has a home and they want to sell it, and you can offer them a way to pay a good price for their house because you could structure it with decent terms, it works out well for everybody. So for an example, if we have that $200,000 house and it needs $30,000 worth of work, your offer is going to be 90 grand, probably 80 grand for that property, right? Because you need to get it for a wholesale and fix and flip it or assign it. Where if you have a turnkey house, what happens to that one that they owe 180 on it and it's worth 200 and it just needs paint and carpet, and they got relocated for their job and they don't want to put it on the market. They're already gone. Right. So we run into those situations a lot. And if something like that happens, or many of the tons of other reasons why that happens, you know, what we do is we can structure a deal with either using a, you know, people here subject to, or what we like to use even more is a wraparound mortgage, because we could wrap a new mortgage with around their existing, which really all that is just a piece of paper that your closing agent, your attorney at the mortgage, it's just a promissory note. It's really what it is. So for an example, if that seller says, I owe 180 and I want 190 for my property. A lot of times what they'll do, if they have a little bit of flexibility when they're going to have that $10,000 worth of equity, I know a lot of times people will say, I'll give you 10 grand down. We typically buy with no money down. So they know that they'll get that $10,000 once our tenant buyer cashes us out. And that's when we get paid. So they understand that. We make the transaction super easy. You know, we'll cover closing costs. So generally out of pocket could be just a handful of thousand. Sometimes we could buy it with a lease purchase, which is actually zero money down. So I love those deals too, because literally you can control real estate by just a piece of paper, where we've done a lot of these lease purchases, no money down. We've got equity built into the deal. We got cash flow built into the deal. We're still finding a tenant buyer, but we didn't even have to close on that property. So with a lease purchase, we still control that. So the way we'll do it is we could still install a tenant buyer, get a down payment or that option deposit. Now it's my money. I could use it. And I'm going to use that for closing costs and actually just close on the property in a few months later. So there's so many cool things you can do. That's why.
Yeah.
It's like an onion. There's so many layers. How deep do you want to go?
Nice little Shrek reference there. I love it. So can you, for, I think our audience or our listeners here, when they hear $0 down, you know, they get excited. They're like, oh, okay. Like I don't have a ton saved up for real estate right now, but I want to get in the game. And I know yours is like 5 layers deep of the onion, right? Maybe 10. Like you're a seasoned vet on this and you're doing it. How does someone, or what would you recommend for someone that, you know, maybe doesn't have a ton of cash and it's one of their first couple deals and they want to get into the game. Like how can they use the least amount of money to get into something? Or maybe people that have one or two deals, right? But they're cash poor at the moment and they just want to, you keep building their portfolio. I think it's one and the same.
Right. So, you know, the one thing, especially if you're either brand new or if you've got onesie twosies, right? Either way, if you have a creative deal, there's some intricate things you really want to make sure that you do correctly. So I would really recommend JVing with somebody who really understands it, will hold your hand through the process. Because for me, I'm a visual learner. And if you hold my hand and walk me through and show me step by step what happens, I know I could duplicate that. And maybe not in the first run through, maybe it's my second or third, but after I got it, after I have that aha, that light bulb goes off, you better watch out. I get dangerous. I can start doing stuff, right?
So. Ryan and I are the same way. We feel the exact same
identical way.
We in our last property, this is our first rehab that we did. And we said, we just finished it. We have some township stuff that we're dealing
always
with.
Permits.
Oh my God. I can't even, you know, it's unbelievable what they're trying to do. But, you know, at the end we're saying, okay, we know exactly what not to do, but that's that mentality that we have. Okay. We just needed to get one on our belt. Now we know how to approach it. So I'll let you continue. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's really it. I mean, that's the name of the game. It's just really kind of JV. Mm-hmm. I would recommend with somebody. Or another thing too, if you really don't want to do that, when you're talking with folks, sometimes it's better off and it makes sense for a wholesale deal. Sometimes you might get a deal under contract and it's a great deal, but you don't have that $5,000 of close on it and the $2,000 it's going to need in paint. I'm sure if the terms are real good, you could assign those terms to either a tenant buyer who would have a down payment and they would pay that closing cost too. And then you could assign them the deal. You could assign that to another investor who would love to be able to have a property for their portfolio. So you've got a few options that you can do and collect assignment fee. And to be quite honest with you, one of our newest students, this kid is amazing. He's working with some of our social media stuff, helping us out. He's been watching a lot of the videos in the background. He found Jen on Instagram and I was like, hey, I'll work for you guys for whatever. I just want to, you know, be around you. And we started mentoring him. He just turned 22 yesterday. We coached him Saturday. He makes calls. Sunday, he makes calls. Monday, he's got a deal.
Wow. So let's talk wholesaling in general, because a lot of people recommend that this is the first way to start outside of house hacking, right? And then this is like, hey, this is how you start conceptualizing deals and understanding how to go through the process. So I know in certain states it's regulated where like you have to, I don't know specifically, you have to like almost like get certified to be a wholesaler, or I think that's the way you say it. But how can one get involved with this? And can you walk us through the process? Like, well, I'm just thinking specifically like for Corey and I. Let's say we find a nice cash flowing deal on the MLS tonight, right? We make an offer and we get it under contract. Like what happens next?
So go ahead.
Well, I don't know, because we don't go to the MLS. So first thing there, I would say, don't go to the MLS if you're brand new. I would say you want an off market property.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
You know, the thing is the MLS, it's been picked over by 1,000 other.
It's not
investors.
What it was in 2008.
No.
Yeah.
We did close on one, but they did find us. We didn't even know it was listed. Mm-hmm. They actually found us through our marketing and say, hey, I have a house for sale. And then lo and behold, after we figured out and agreed to terms, she's like, oh, by the way, it's listed with a realtor. That one's actually in Pennsylvania. Yeah. So we had to pay the realtor commission. That's why also I don't love doing off the MLS, because if you do make a deal, you know, chances are your tenant buyer your seller is not going to come to a table with money. So if you're paying closing costs and now you've got to pay a realtor commission and it's now a high entry fee, that a lot of times could be a no-go. So I'd love to find the off market leads. Those are really where you want to try to just where's the rocks that haven't been overturned yet, right?
So let's say that you went to Zillow and you're looking in this one area and you've called like, I don't know, 25 different for sale by owners, right? Because that's how our one student found one of his houses. And at that point, you've got somebody on the phone where, yeah, I'm just ready to walk away. I don't want this house, but you know, what are you going to do with it type thing?
Kicking it back to creative financing, I know it's kind of all one large conversation here, but can you talk about specifically IRAs and how you've used those to land deals? And like, maybe that's for clients or yourselves, just another way to use some cash that people have. They don't even know they can deploy it in another avenue, but take it away.
So we love IRA.
Love them.
Using a self-directed IRA. The one that we use is Quest Trust Company. They're right out of Houston, Texas. I highly recommend them. They're awesome. Their team has a ton of educational stuff. Their YouTube channel is fantastic. They're really a fantastic team and their customer service is excellent. So Quest Trust Company is pretty awesome. So what we did was with my old job, I had a 401k, had a lot of money in it. We converted that into a self-directing IRA. And with using a self-directed IRA, if you're going to buy and sell real estate, you could do that inside of your IRA and you could do it tax-free. So what happens is if you do buy a property, like Jen actually on Facebook found a piece of land, a raw piece of land in town. And she was like, this just looks really cheap. And I was like, it does. Let's see if we could see if it's still available. She did. And we bought it. We bought it for $8,000 and with closing costs, it was $9,500. So we bought that inside of a Roth IRA. So that's already been taxed. So that'll never be taxed again. So we bought it for that $9,500. We put it on the market with a realtor for $30,000. We sold it for $26,000 and something. We net $24,000, I think two when we were all said and done. So now obviously we just made, you know, almost a $15,000 profit within a few months. Now that profit goes back into our IRA tax-free. So this is where now you can build your portfolio and your nest egg a lot quicker because you're not paying tax on those deals. So wow. We do any type of, you know, some of the fix and flips that we'll do because there are certain things you really need to understand how to do it correctly. But like the fix and flips we'll do, we love to do some of those inside the IRA. It's money you can't touch now. But when you're 59 and a half, you're going to be
sitting pretty. Absolutely. Pretty. Can you talk? So how come you're directing these, or I guess converting a 401k to a self-directed IRA? Can you explain like the importance of doing that and like why you did that? Were there restrictions on your 401k that you couldn't invest in certain things? Just very curious.
So what's the average annual rate of return on a 401k over your lifetime? Do you know?
I could guess, probably not too high. I don't know, 7, 8?
You're right in the range. Okay. If you're real good, it could be maybe slightly more, but generally you're going to be in that 8%, right? But if you look at what inflation is, you know, if you're going to be depending on a 401k to bail you out when you're 60 years old, you're going to be in a not good spot, right? So my question to you is when we bought that land for 9,500 and we turned that into 24.2 clear, what was the rate of return on my money on that deal in 3 months?
300. a lot more.
At least we tripled it. Yeah.
Over a little over 150% return. So with that being the case, these are why we really, really like these deals. To get 40 to 50% return on our money within 3 to 5 months is typical.
But would you say that while you were in your W-2, you would just continue to max out? And that was really important to do that so that when you walked away from that and that account closed or what you...
Yeah, because what happens is when you have your day job and you're contributing into your 401k, you can't just go rolling that in. Now, if you have an IRA, then you can, right? But I actually had to, it was time to leave my day job, and I had that lump sum because I was just putting as much money as my 401k as I could every year for a long time. It kind of really, you know, jumped, and I was doing it at the right time when the market was really low. So it worked out well. So it gave us the ability now to, if we see some of these fix and flips, we could have that option. You know, some of these we'll buy them, close on it, not do anything to it, and then resell it right away and make 50%, 40% returns on these properties, and goes right back in there tax-free. So you're becoming there's IRA millionaires out there who are using this technique, who are becoming millionaires through their IRA so much quicker because they're not doing that. And if you can do one or two of these deals inside there and get a little bit of a nest egg, then you could have some real fun. But with that, there's also other things you could do with that money other than real estate. It's not just real estate. You could get into a ton of stuff, but that's a different.
So the IRA just lets you be a little bit more creative, right? I guess what you're saying is like the 401k was too restrictive, right? You just could only pump money into it and over time. Whereas like the IRA, you can somehow pull money out or keep pumping it in. Cause you're saying like an IRA millionaire, but wouldn't it be kind of the same thing? Like as just dumping it into the 401k and having $1 million in there one day too, or where am I missing?
Yeah. But once again, you know, usually the rate of return per year is about 8%. So if you've got $100,000, I'm just going to use that rough number. What are you going to have in about a year on average, right? You're not going to have a huge return on that. But if you were to take that $100,000 and do in that same year, two or three deals, where you're getting a 50% return on those, what is your money going to be at in that next year? It's going to be substantially larger. And what I like is it's backed by real estate. What you probably don't remember, because you know I'm a little older, but in 2008, when the market really took a crash, I watched full-grown adults come into my office and they lost their tails, right? And it was a really tough scene to be seeing people doing that because they left money in the market. So right now the market is at a record high. And obviously what does go up eventually comes down, and it still will go up too, because it always does. But you know, at one point it could, I'm not going to rule it out, but I like what we're doing because I control the deals and the rate of return on those deals. And I already have it really forecast before I'm even pulled the trigger. So at that point, I trust myself than I do Merrill Lynch.
Yeah. Very, very good point. One of the interesting things that I noticed about the way that you're doing business is that there's so many different exit strategies that you have, and you're able to say, well, if it doesn't work for this way, it can work another way. And so knowing that going into deals, what is the, do you have three or four bullet points that you look at to know if something is a good deal and you'll have a specific exit strategy?
Ooh, buddy. Great question. Yeah, absolutely. So I try to look at every deal. Obviously, if we could buy it on terms, I like that. A lot of times we could generate value into a deal just by negotiating really good terms.
Yep.
There's times where we've had 0% mortgages. We've got them right now. I mean, now if you could negotiate a 0% mortgage, there's a ton of value there. So therefore, sometimes you could just create it. But the big things we look at is how much money down to get into the deal. What's my cost of buying this deal? That's number one, right? What's the monthly cash flow? That's huge. Is there cash flow? Am I making $500-$600 a month? Okay. What length of term am I going to get this deal for? Do they want to get cashed out? Does my seller want to get cashed out in 2 to 3 years, or do they not care? And they could just say, hey, whenever, right? That's a big difference to me. And then the least thing I'm concerned about is the price.
Got it.
So fix and flip guys, wholesale guys, they're looking, that's the first thing, price. I don't care. I mean, I still care. Don't get me wrong, but if I could get a zero, and I guess my point is if you could buy a $200,000 home, it's turkey. It's worth 200 grand and you're going to pay 200 grand for it. But your seller gives you a super low payment at 0%, no money down for 15 years.
It doesn't really matter if it's $200,000 or if it's $400,000 almost, right?
But the price could be relevant to a point, but you know what? That's the whole point of it, is you're paying it down so much quicker. So if you do that deal, $500 a month, that's 6,000 a year. Over the course of 15 years, what you're going to owe on that, it's going to be almost nothing.
Yep.
So you were able to pay down the principal a lot faster just by negotiating good terms. That has a lot of value to it. So I can pay top dollar for a house because of that now, where other investors are like, how are you buying a $200,000 house for 200 grand and making any money on it? because my payment's low. It didn't cost me much to get in the deal, and I'm paying down the principal so quick. That's how.
Very cool.
So I just gave you some secret sauce there, guys.
It's great. We could use it. So I'm curious as
some juice. Actually, I gave you some juice.
I was about
juice.
To say.
Yeah.
Just with the weekly juice.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Boom. That's good stuff.
All right.
What is one of, if you could maybe walk us through a deal that got you really excited, or maybe your most lucrative, or something that, just kind of, maybe you hit a home run. We always like telling like the high success stories here. If there's something that you maybe have in the back of your mind that you would like to share, that'd be awesome.
You know what? So I know that a lot of folks look for a home run, and don't get me wrong, everybody must love them. My whole thought process is I'm cool with getting on first and second base a lot. So therefore we have the whole thing as being grateful over greedy. And I'll give you a great example. We're in New York. We got a lead. Lady's got a house for sale in North Pole, Alaska.
Okay. Really a place.
It's really
cool. Norway, North Pole, like Christmas.
Legit North Pole. Like if you
look at Santa's house.
Sick. And love it. What's also true is there's a huge US military base where they test some fighter jets there. And this is like a few miles from the military base. And the military base is having a huge influx of new recruits going there. So the lady's like, it's got a lot of upside potential. So I look on Zillow to find this estimate. It shows 250. Now it shows 300 grand. So the area, I don't know what's going on over there, but I still think it's around a 250 value. And I think that was pretty accurate the first time. I think 300 might be high. She's like, this house has been vacant for 2 years. We've been making a $1,200 payment for 2 years. And I just want this thing off my back. Mm-hmm. I know it needs some work. I just want to walk away from this payment. She's like, I'll sell it to you for what I owe. I said, what do you owe on it? She's like, oh, 155. I said, okay, well, how much work does it need? She's like, I got quoted a contractor of like $20,000. I'll send you the list. And it was like replaced ceiling fan for like $800, which was like really high, but
right.
Also Alaska. So maybe a ceiling fan is really expensive because it costs so much to ship. I don't know. Right. I'm not in Alaska doing jobs, but you know, it kind of is what it is. I'm sure Amazon's not just like, hey, every 2 minutes up in, you know,
North. I don't know.
Right? I don't know. Santa's there, man. He could be building.
Maybe they can make something happen, but either way, what we just did is we signed that to another investor for $10,000. Now we could have got 20, we could have got 25, we could have got 30, maybe even, but I don't know a lot of investors in North Pole. And you know what I want to do is I don't want to sit on a deal for 3 or 4 months because of how many other deals we're working on that cost me money by taking up so much time. I rather just make 10,000, sell it quick. And that deal, one of our more recent deals, not the most recent, but it's, we haven't closed on it. We had that under contract 2 days later, it's under contract again. Done, wrapped up.
So can you give us the nitty gritty of that too? Like, I'm so curious. That's what my question was kind of before. Like, you had it under contract, right? And you're like, all right, I have another buyer that'll for $10,000, right? That'll be your headhunter fee, if you will. What's the logistics to like transition the deal over?
So what happened was, we got it under contract. I did not have a buyer originally. We don't know anybody in North Pole. So thank goodness for social media, right? But we have somebody on our team. We actually have a team. We have 5 people who work with sellers. We didn't even get into that yet. And then we have one, and we're interviewing a second actually later tonight to join the team for the folks who help sell it. So we actually have one of the girls on our team. Her name is Courtney. She's working with selling every one of these properties we get under contract. And homegirl is amazing. Mm-hmm. So she started posting it. We kind of put our heads together on the marketing plan, and she puts on Craigslist and Facebook and all the different places. And she found a buyer, and the guy's like, yeah, I'm actually doing a job 3/4 mile down the road. I've got 6 fix and flips going on right in that area.
It was on our anniversary. I remember she called us July 10th and she's like, I have good news. And we were like, all right, bring it, you know? And it's just so funny because every day is, you know, real estate day, even on anniversary. So we were so excited to hear that because especially with that seller story, like she needed to sell that house and get that payment off of her as soon as possible.
Yeah. So we sent out assignment form to the seller. He signs it. We sent all the closing work to the attorneys, or there's a closing agent there. Mm-hmm. And once he goes to closing, he's going to bring a check for, you know, X amount, and that closing agent's going to disperse those checks. Some going to the property, some going to closing costs and other, you know, things that go there. And then obviously our fee, and then they disperse everything from there. And we've never seen the property. And I mean, just a few pictures because they're not even there. They live in North Carolina now. So it's not like I could even see the video walkthrough like we like to do. So grateful over greedy, because what I want to have happen and what Jen wants to have happen is our buyer who buys that property, I hope they hit a home run.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I hope our buyers hit the home runs, because I know if I ever have a deal in North Pole, Alaska, ever again, I know who to call, and he's going to love to see my phone call. Now, if he got burned on my deal, do you think he's going to be as happy?
Not right? even close.
So I love when we assign a deal to somebody and they hit a home run, that's really a good feeling. We got a little something. And if our buyer feels like they won, mission accomplished, right? So that's what we look for.
I like that a lot. Go ahead, Corey.
Yeah. One of the cool things that I think about your story, the two of you, and we get a lot of investors on our podcast, and they talk about kind of niching down and understanding their specific niche and going after a specific market and learning that really well, and then, and executing, right? But what you two are doing is really all about adaptability. Like, you're going into totally different markets and understanding how they work and how the best, what's the best exit for you in that specific scenario. And I think that's really, really cool. That's just understanding real estate at a high level, right? And it's, you can do it, you can win both ways, but I think that you, the fact that you have so many different ways that you can make money in real estate, it's almost like you can't lose. And that doesn't mean that you don't lose money on properties in certain ways, but I just think it's a really cool a point there.
Yeah, but you know, but here's the thing too. If you're going to lose money on a deal, time can correct that too. So you can still make it. Not, I mean, mm-hmm. there's
and,
ways though.
And I have to say, you know, like we have the creative finance playbook that we're working on right now for that reason alone. Because as I saw all of this starting to unfold, because once upon a time we just had rentals, right? We fixed and we flipped, and then we put renters inside. But we've spent so much time on education and masterminds and mentoring and really putting into ourselves and growing our minds that we're able to do that. And so that's why for us, it's huge to give back, because the more plays you have, the more ways you're going to help people. And in essence, more money that you'll be able to make. And with that money, you'll be able to help more people and do more wonderful things in the world. And I think that it's an ongoing process to continually, you know, work on your education. And I think it's important to do something really well. You know, like I said, for us, it was very beginning. We just did the renting and there were mistakes made back then, and I learned from them. And, you know, we've had our fair share of oopsies, and, you know, we just continue to learn and grow and continue to scale up and help other people as well. And I just think, you know, if you're starting out, to go back to that, don't be afraid to fail, because like you just said, you can't fail if you don't quit. You just have to keep going. Like Joe said, like time, you know, just continue going and putting that time into things, it will always come back.
Really good points overall. I think you touched on a bunch of them, but like finding, you know, we call it like your tribe almost too, right? You're just building your network, right? It's like spider webbing out. And then the more people you help, obviously it's going to come full circle. We're big karma guys and having things come back, but you're leaving a lasting impression on someone else. You change their life. It might be something small, but it will come back full circle. And then I like how you mentioned just like, almost like surrounding yourself with the right people or like-minded people. I know you said masterminds and you have the creative finance playbook, and it's all part of that. But that's when we really started to see our business take form and like start to scale a little bit. It's like when we started putting our message out there, but like surrounding yourself with people that have done it before you, right? There's people like, look at you guys that 20 plus years in the biz ish. And I think you, if I'm not mistaken, you almost get, there's some sort of like pride in helping someone else like elevate their game and like giving back. Right. I think we've heard it time and time again, like, especially if you're not looking for the home run deal, you're looking for the ones and twos, but to help someone else at the end of the line, maybe that's their first deal in it. Then they get the spark of real estate and they're helping people down the line. I think it's just admirable. And it's cool to talk about, because a lot of people, what I originally thought coming into this game, that it was like a competition, right? Like, oh, people are going to hoard deals and they want to keep it for themselves because they want to make a couple bucks. And it's more so been, no, there's places out there for everybody, and we all want a piece of the, we'll all share the pie, which is kind of different. And I think it's cool to put out there, because a lot of people I think are afraid and think otherwise, unless they're having conversations with cool people like you and really get it. So
abundance mindset that changed everything. You know, like I think in the beginning you do have that fear factor of, oh, I don't want to, you know, it, I got to make sure I do everything correctly. And then once you're like, no, like there's plenty out there and just, you know, it's a deal might work for you, might work for him, might work for her. And, you know, who can you help at the right time in the right place? And having that mentality has been everything.
It's really cool. Before we get into the kind of last segment of the show, I do have one more specific question for you guys, because it seems like you have your hands in a lot of different buckets in your business, right? So I'm looking to kind of consolidate the, yeah, that's probably saying it light. But to consolidate this thing down, like how, what are some of the specific systems that you use to keep yourself organized? So that way you can have everything kind of streamlined and working, interweaving amongst each other, maybe a couple platforms, apps, specific things that you use. I think it'd just be nice to share with others because they're probably looking to organize their lives a little bit too.
Can I get this one? Her name is Jen Delafave.
No. I was going to say, first and foremost, you need to really figure out what you're really good at and what you're not. Because we were doing this even last year when it was just the two of us, we didn't have a team, and he's trying to teach me to get on the phone with sellers. And it just, my heart, I could do it, but I was just like, oh, I just, you know, it's not my thing. And once I stopped trying to be the thing I wasn't, and I just went into what I'm really good at, which is Google Calendar, to answer one of your questions, live and die by that thing. And really having a whole organizational system in place and realizing that what my role really worked with as versus him, he loves talking to sellers. He could talk all day long to people on the phone. Like that's his thing. So getting the right butt in the right seat, I would say, is most important before any app. So strengths and weaknesses, lay it all out on the table, whether it's just you, figure it out, hire somebody quickly if you are not good at something. So if you don't have the time or don't like talking to sellers, then find somebody that does, you know, or you know, you should at least do it at first, because, you know, if you don't do it, it's hard to teach somebody else, I think. But, you know, as far as apps go, definitely, I would say Google Calendar. Something that we help, that helps me with accounting wise, is I actually hired our accountant to help me with the bookkeeping. So I use the app Genius Scan, which he discovered years ago.
We love that app.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So
it's free. It's amazing.
Just scan everything over.
It's so amazing.
We are old school. So deals, coming from the car business, he had, you know, manila folders. So I just put the property name and any paper goes in there. And then I have actual stack of, you know, file cabinets and just put it in there. And then, you know, as we've scaled, it's again, finding the right person. So having Courtney take care of all the houses that we're selling and finding the buyers has been so helpful. And today officially, she is now going to make sure the utilities go on at those properties, because I've dropped the ball there. And so it's important to make sure that those things get done.
But in your defense, not for nothing, like we had 5 closings in one day.
I know.
That's 5 closings of like changing utilities for all 5. And sometimes they've got multiple, and then you've got insurances coming on, coming
it's
off.
Brutal. No, we trust me. We get it. Even having like 5 to 7 rentals, we're like, oh my God, like this paperwork is so annoying at some points. And you know, you think it's for one property, it's for the other. I want to touch on like hire you guys kind of throw it around loosely of like, hey, like just hire the right person. I think a lot of people are like, well, I don't have like 40 grand to hire a full-time employee. And I think it's not that. So can you kind of like, I'm also hearing there's certain websites. I think Fiverr might be one. I know people hire out a lot of creative and like marketing there, but where did you find Courtney, and is she like a VA, or like, can you talk about hiring someone for a specific role potentially?
Yeah. Well, we actually started hiring. It happened last year, but you know, I think you got to look at it. What could you pay them in? So for us, a lot of it is going to be education. So those who help us buy the properties are getting a heck of an education on how to buy creatively and also sell. I would say Courtney's learning that as well. But then also, which it took us a while to kind of realize that you can pay, you know, as a 1099. And so it's purely commission based. So.
Well, I would say too, you know, we're coaches. We coach other folks on how to do what we're doing, and our students are doing really well. They pay us to coach them, right? But also too, we run into a lot of folks who want to be real estate investors who actually want to be part of our team, which is really neat too, because what they do is we're going to teach them how to do it, what exactly we're doing. And they're going to sit behind the scenes, so they don't have to close on that deal. They could watch it happen. They're going to watch all the magic happen, be a part of it. And then also we're going to pay them. So they're not paying us to get the coaching. We're actually paying them to get coached, and we're teaching other folks who want to be real estate investors exactly what it is behind the scenes. Here's our CRM. Here's our incoming leads. Here's our marketing. Like this, we share everything. We have meetings twice a week, three times a week, as tomorrow morning, just to talk about it. It's like, we have sales training and we have a Zoom every Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. And I'm on the Zoom and we're going over our script. We're going over role playing, because this is a script that John and I designed, and it really just is amazing. So we kind of designed it because our daughter right now, she's 8. And then I talked to her today, in 5 years, she's 13. She's going to be doing this script and buying real estate. And she's down. So
I didn't hear that conversation.
Yes.
Oh, very God. Cool. That's pretty funny. Corey and I are both in sales. So I mean, sales script is semi a nightmare for me, but then also semi, I know how important it is. And it's like, you know, it's literally the backbone and how you.
Yeah. But you know, and you're right. A lot of scripts were nightmares and I hated them because I felt like I was looking at a roadmap. And when I was having Jen try to talk to sellers, she was like, I didn't know what box to go to. And am I going to page 18 or is it 20? And it was like way too confusing. So what we did is we have it's a straight line approach. You ask questions in a series. What we do is we actually have the seller make us the offer by asking the right questions. And then we look at the offer and see if that's something we want to do, or do we need to tune it? And if it is, we go into the closing call script and then we go into the deal meeting. I mean, we have a inline process. It's well-defined. So once you have good people and you put them into a good process and you bring them so many leads that they're busy, it works out well.
Love that. Very cool. I think we're at the time where we're at our second to last segment of the show. It's called the Core Four. We're going to give you some more personal questions and just to get to know you a little bit more and maybe kind of see what makes you tick a little bit. So the first question is, what is your favorite business, real estate, or investing book that maybe got you in the right frame of mind to get started?
Well, you, Tom, because we're at the same one.
Well, it's not a real estate book, but Think and Grow Rich is the book that I've listened to it here and there, but I actually read it front to back last year. And thinking back on the tremendous growth that we did scale really quickly, looking back, because when you're going through it, it didn't seem like it kind of felt like I wasn't doing enough. But now I'm at the point of taking a breath and seeing. So Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill outlines everything, how to be successful, whether it's in your life, health-wise, relationships, money. And I was just saying to him the other day, I need to pick it back. It's like speaking to me. It's like, pick me up, read me again, because it's one of those books where it'll talk to you. And if it's not talking to you, you need to read it again.
Well, and I think too of it, like the lion is the king of the jungle, but he's not the biggest in the jungle. Right. So the lion's got that mentality. Okay. I'm not the biggest, but I'm the baddest and I'm the king of the jungle. So what this book kind of teaches you is mentality. And if you're going to have the right mentality to be successful, this is going to be in anything. It doesn't matter if it's real estate involved or not, but this kind of sets you up for that mentality that will translate into whatever it is you want to do. So when you're doing real estate, anything is going to be mentally challenging, right? And real estate is very mentally challenging. It could be downright disturbing sometimes. Okay. So with that, you have to have a good head on your shoulders.
Be very strong.
I mean, there's times where we've lost a $50,000 deal. And you know what happens? Move on.
With the punches. Yeah.
Just get another one. Mm-hmm. Get it. If you want to work on getting so many leads coming in that if you lose a $50,000 deal, I got another one coming, I'm sure. So just keep going. If that's the only lead you have and the only deal you work on, you're going to be depressed. So just get a lot of leads, but it happens, right? By going to the tax sale literally the next day, like crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. So you got to be mentally tough. And if you have that challenge in your head that like, no matter what, I'm not stopping, because you're going to need to have that just piggish determination that no matter what, I'm not stopping. Like I'm going to be damn successful in this. And you guys are already in the right path because you're being around a lot of other people who are doing this and you could absorb all of this knowledge and kind of figure out what works gels for you both. Right. Totally. So, that's really key. You got to have the right mindset and then learn stuff from real estate. We teach, we give back a lot. We have a lot of free stuff So if you're on Facebook, we have Creative Finance Playbook, where we do live seller calls. Like if you want to see us and our team on there, you want to hear about the Alaska deal, just go check out the last event. That's the first time I talked to him. And we wrapped up that deal that day. And from that, and every single time we do these live seller call events, we make deals. So I love doing them. We should probably do another one. Because we get on a Zoom, here's our whole team. And like one of them pick up the phone, like, okay, I got one. And we get on a closing call and go over the deal points. And we wrap up deals. So if you're ever curious, check those out. YouTube, same thing. Jen's Instagram, she puts a ton of great stuff out there. My Instagram kind of sucks.
We're working on it.
So that's how we found Jen. So that's why we got the interview. So that's great.
And that's really what it is. It's because of her is why we have that presence. Because for me, I was always the investor who's just like on the DL, just doing deals. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, we got so much great stuff. We need to share some of this. And I'm like, I guess. And meanwhile, she's over here just killing it. So it's really, really helpful because what we're doing, it's unique. And if more people understood what we're doing, you would lose your mind.
Yeah. No, we love it. So you mentioned it would suck to lose a $50,000 deal. I have a new addition to the Core Four. It's question number two here is if you had an extra $50,000 cash right now, discretionary income to use on whatever you want, what would you spend it on or invest it in? Like, how would you divvy up the 50,000 and why?
You don't want my answer. I'd probably buy some Bitcoin.
Okay. Oh. You would get one Bitcoin. What is it at four? It's at 38 now, 40, maybe 45.
We're in that range. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would probably actually diversify it up into like Ethereum and a couple other cryptos. Cause I'm multi-dimension, that's a whole other podcast. So 2017, I started buying it in 2018, 19, 20, when it was really cheap for a bunch of years and she thought I was crazy. And then finally it's like worth something now. And I'm
It
depends on the day, but right now it's worth a lot. So I'm like, yeah, see,
you're looking good.
And then tomorrow I'll give you like, she's like, why are you so quiet? I'm like, nothing, you know?
Yeah, I haven't heard crypto mentioned in a while.
Until the next day. Yeah.
Putting it into an IRA or something along those lines.
Okay. Well, that's a responsible thing to do. But crypto is great too. I love that stuff.
You're yin and yang. You got the black and the white on. It's perfect. You're even.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Perfect.
Cool. Hardcore. So the third question of the Core Four is, what has been your biggest mistake along your investing journey or in your investing career, and how have you learned from it?
Aside from not starting sooner, right?
That's kind of everyone's answer, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I would agree with ours. It really
I know mine. It's what got me into it. Like,
go ahead then.
Okay, well, you think of yours, if you can have one. I would say it was 2015, and so we had a couple of rentals. And I had a 9-month-old and a 2-year-old. And so busy being mom at home. And he was trying to buy another property. And I stopped up at his job and he's like, you didn't pay the taxes. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm on the phone with the bank, da 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 da. You know, he's rattling all these things. And I'm like, but I know I would pay this. I would do that. I know I'm busy. Well, all of our tax bills for all the properties went to one of our rental properties. I still don't know how it happened. And so there they stacked up. Now, one word from the renter, because it was before rent to own. And I just realized like in that moment, I didn't like step into this game and like, holy crap, we've got a real business going here back in 2015, even though I don't really see exactly where it's going. And I was, you know, kind of in the mom mode, like not sleeping and baby's crying, all the thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, girl, like get in this game. And like, I've always supported him, been very, you know, housewife and just, I love being that mom and the wife. And I was like, okay, you're a real estate investor. Like get with the program.
Straightened him out.
So that's cool. That kind of hurt. Cause there was was there one lien? Or I remember we had to go to like the big city hall and pay one thing and it was fine in the end, but it
doesn't
was like,
that usually get rolled into your mortgage, by the way, your taxes, or is it not with this specific property?
No, because we were, these were through, we bird way back when, and the taxes were separately.
Got it.
So you'd have to pay the school in the fall and the spring were the county. And so it was all the school taxes.
Cause it was like Thanksgiving.
Because we didn't get any of the school taxes because they went to the rental and the rental place, they just kept getting all the bills and throw them right in the garbage.
I mean, they must have had like 50 envelopes.
And,
I don't know.
And I call them. I'm like, have you guys been getting this? Like, yeah, we just been throwing them out. And I'm like, oh, I'm
it has my name on it, dude.
Yeah, I was going to like have a seizure, but they're great people. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, hey, thanks a lot.
So that was
the thing that boggles my mind about all that is like, still the most infuriating thing is like these water bills and the companies, like you can't even pay automatic payments or online, like you can't even set that up. So it's like having these things get thrown out is like even beyond more frustrating because it's just more paperwork. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And I would say my biggest thing really was, you know, I got in the wholesaling in 2000. There was really, you didn't hear about that back then. And then we started burring in 2008, 9, and 10 before I had that term. So when she came to me a year or two ago, I'm like, hey, we used to do burr. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then she explained, I'm like, oh, okay. Our biggest mistake is we were putting all of these loans in our personal name. We were taking on all of that debt. And what was happening was I knew better, but I didn't do better. And the reason why is because what I seen was a lot of investors get crushed in 2008. You don't think a lot of investors are getting crushed right now who haven't received rent in how long? So what's called non-recourse debt means that the debt isn't held against you personally, right? So these folks who have went to the bank and gotten loans in the last 5-10 years, who are now landlords, who've maybe not collected rent for 18 months, because I just saw one of my friends on Facebook say, hey, I hope the courts open soon because it's been 18 months since he's collected rent. Now, if that's maybe somebody who owns 2 or 3 properties and you got that happening, you might not be able to make those payments. Now what's going on with your credit? Or what's going on with your personal life? Are you paying all those bills? Are you paying that now to preserve your credit, or is your credit going in the tank? So that's why with what we do with creative financing and a lot of the ways that we could structure it is what we do. I can't say it's foolproof as far as preventing things from happening. It's just a lot less likely any of those events will happen. So that's why, you know, when we were doing the old fashioned burr, it's very risky and folks don't know all the risks of it because they haven't seen what happened in 2008. And obviously what happened in 2020 to now, they're getting another eye opener, but a lot of people aren't going to learn from it. And they'll go back into the bank and say, okay, I've got 20% down. And, you know, and they're buying at the top of the market. You know, I was in Clubhouse not long ago and these guys are buying properties in Tampa. And he's like, everyone I'm finding is $60,000 to $75,000 over asking. He's like, but I'm buying them because I get cash flow. And I'm like, holy cow, like the market is pretty hot right now. Everything is super high right now. And you're spending $70,000 over list price just to put a whole bunch of money into it to get it out to a price. It's absolutely.
You're not giving yourself that 15 or 20% buffer where I think that there will be a correction. I don't think there's going to be any sort of crash. There's just not enough inventory, but like, I think there will be some sort of correction. So like that 60 to 70 grand could potentially be gone very fast, you know? And it's just, that's unfortunate.
And if their tenant doesn't perform and now they can't pay that, they could just get into a little bit of a mess. So yep. Therefore, I think that's one of the biggest things to look at is, you know, Google non-recourse debt and start getting real good at that stuff. That's stuff that other investors don't talk about. That's not the sexy stuff like saying sub 2 or whatever, but this is why that stuff is important.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you recommend for people not to put these in their own names, essentially? Like, we basically have heard like, oh, you can transfer to your LLC, but then, you know, you have the due on sale clause that potentially your loan could get called. We've never heard it happen, but it probably has, obviously.
Yeah, it happens. There's things that you could do to make it less likely to happen. However, it could happen. And I think once again, if you have a situation that it can, and you're that 1 out of 1,000, you know, you want to have a couple strategies that you can do. You know, we prefer to have them deeded into a land trust rather than having them deeded to an LLC. There's some reasons behind that. It's very easy to correct if it does happen, especially if it's in a land trust. And that's one of the tools that we really like. If you deed the property into a land trust, they made it, the deed of St. Germain is in 1982. It's this act that if a property was deeded into a land trust, the bank can't call the loan due. However, the beneficiary of that has to be the homeowner, right? So what happens is if we buy the property, we'll buy it into a land trust. And what we'll do with that land trust is that our LLC is the beneficiary of that. If the bank were to ever call the loan due, I could just with a simple form just say, oh yes, look at here it is. Now they are the beneficiary of it. And when they're cool, you could change it back. There's lots of different ways that you can do it that will make it to appease the bank and not have to pay that.
Interesting.
Really like it.
Yeah. I mean, and you want to make sure that the big thing is too, what we do is we were working with a tenant buyer once again. So this isn't a property we're going to be holding for 30 years either. This is a property that within probably 5 years ish range, give or take a couple here or there, that we're going to cash out of that property and be gone with it. And I like that idea because I don't want to hold it when it's time to put a new roof or put a new bathroom in there because the thing's old and it's dilapidated or it needs a new furnace, right? Like yep. We get to avoid all of those things by selling it when the house is still in decent shape and not starting to get older.
Yep. Gotcha. Absolutely.
Because all those hidden expenses get to add up quickly.
Yeah, they definitely do. They do. Well, I don't even want to go there for right now. So last question of the core four is, and you can both answer this however you want. I'm sure it might be a little different, but what do you each want your legacy to be? Like, why are you doing this whole thing and what gets you out of bed every morning?
That's a big one. Well, I think first and foremost, it was having him home and working together. You know, we always just joked around before when I was a teacher and he was at his job, we literally maybe saw each other in the morning and for a little time at night. And I just didn't like that. We would just never see each other. And, you know, to have the time now and to cultivate the relationship with our children and kind of change the course of our family, the four of us, is really one of the most important things to me. Again, that time freedom of being able to create your own schedule and actually get to know your children instead of shuffling them out the door or, you know, off to practice or wherever, here, there, and everywhere, and to really enjoy each other. And, you know, to leave something for them, to leave something for the grandchildren, to, you know, to show that we, you know, we did something. You know, his family came from Italy and, you know, really left a mark, and that left a huge impression on him. And for me, my ancestors date back to the Mayflower, and I've actually like dove into that a little bit. And, you know, just, I'm like, I want to be that, you know, I want to have our name on a wall somewhere, or in, I guess in this day and age, it'd be the computer, you know, that Joe and Jen Delafave did X, Y, and Z. And because they worked really hard, they were able to provide whatever it is that we're doing, you know? And so to just really make a big difference for the future generations and not get caught up in the crazy that is today, because it's very easy to let that happen. So really the future to me is all about the good things in life and what we can really experience together.
Yeah. And I think too, is like the big picture for me has always been lifestyle. Like I want to be able to vacation. I want to be able to travel. And I want to always be able to give back. So like we've talked about at charities, you know, donating, you know, hundreds of pairs of kids' sneakers to schools, you know, doing things like that. Cause I grew up where there was a point in my life where I had sneakers that were all ripped up. My parents, they have money for new ones. So to be able to do that for, you know, kids that might be in that same situation mm-hmm. and just do other kind of great things and make sure our kids are a part of that. Because to be quite honest with you, I don't want to leave a lot to them. I want to spend it all on her and donate the rest of it.
Yep. My dad says that all the time. That's hilarious.
Because you know what? If we give them everything and right. we fish for them, they're never going to need to learn, right? But we want to give right. them the best start that they can. But you know, I really want to put that on them.
Perfect. Cool. Love that. Well, we've made it to the last segment of the show. It's called The Last Drop. And this question is, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self if you go back to 18, 19, younger Jen and younger Joe?
I would have said when I flipped my first house, don't get into the car business and just stuck with it and started doing creative. Creative really wasn't a big thing back then, but if I knew everything I knew now, I mean, geez, my freaking
private. You might have an island named after you.
My private jet would be nasty. Probably my third one or something.
We might not have met though.
So. No.
Ah, there you go.
Oh. No way. You're a hot chick. So. I would have scooped you up in the jet and took you off somewhere.
There you go.
I would say for me, it's more of like the mind piece. I was always, you know, I kind of still am, I guess, in a way perfectionist, but I've really learned to just do it, right? It's never going to be perfect. I would delay things because I was just so worried about X, Y, or Z. And I think now that I'm 40, I can really just just go and do it. Right. And you can always fix things along the way and just get it out there, the rough draft, and then, you know, create and edit the, all the way through, but, you know, just stop worrying about anything else and just do it. Take the steps, jump off, don't wait, because you don't get any younger and you don't get the time back. So definitely just, if you're interested, follow that and do it.
Love it. I love that answer. Just cause you know, you are always, you have to plan for mistakes because they're going to happen. So it's like, you might as well just go figure out the mistakes as they happen instead of worrying about them before. So we love that answer, but
you know what? I think masterminding is important because that's kind of like taking the elevator versus taking the floor to, or the stairs to success, because you could, the best lesson sometimes is learn from other people's mistakes. So being a part of mastermind, to be quite honest with you, what we spent on masterminding would probably surprise a lot of people because it's been a fortune, but we really see the most value of not putting money into real estate, but putting money into ourselves. And that's where we've seen the biggest amount of return, because learning from other folks and learning it from folks who are doing it at a very high level, who are actually doing it, not just the entrepreneurs, but the actual ones who are doing deals at a high rate. Those are the folks you want to learn from. So what we've always saw value was, is how do I get to be that? And then when we're there, like, how do I get to do that again and repeatedly and just keep going? So who would ever think a year ago or 2 years ago we'd be doing this? It's crazy.
It's awesome. Congratulations.
You're putting your mark on the world here. So we appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of others listening did. So with that, if people enjoyed the show and they thought you two were a wealth of knowledge and they want to network and get to know you better and potentially, like, I don't know, somehow get in touch with you, how would you recommend them finding you, or where should they go?
Yeah, like Joe mentioned earlier, Instagram is a great place. At Jen, J-E-N-N, Delafave. I try to post frequently and go live and share as much as we can. His is Joseph Delafave. And then also creativefinanceplaybook.com. We've got master classes. We'll have free content. We are opening up enrollment for our students. We're only taking a select number this fall, and that will be in September. So it's literally right around the corner. We hold a free consult to see if we're a good fit, because we do want to make sure that we give the best that we can to our students and that they are in the right place at the right time.
Right.
All right. Well, Jen and Joe, thank you so much. It was a true pleasure having you on the show. You dropped some wisdom on us, and we talked a lot of different topics that we haven't covered yet. So we appreciate it. We'll send people your way, and thank you again.
Awesome. Thank you.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you both so much. That was wonderful.